Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.
Welcome to Point of View. This is Guga and I also call it our Friday edition of Point of View and Talk, because obviously, as you know, we are here until Thursday, and then of course we come back on a Monday. So lots coming up on the show on a Thursday. We usually have also lots of fun as well, music, some what to watch as well. So do stick around for that. We'll have that a bit later on in the show. I don't know if you were able to get the press briefing that was given by the Minister of Health, Aaron Motsoaledi, earlier on today. We'll play it for you. He was scheduled to talk to us, and then unfortunately at the very, very last minute wasn't able to do that. But I think what came out of that press briefing was very, very important. In fact, he was scathing. He really, really was scathing at what is disinformation and misinformation about what PEPFAR, us losing the funding from the US government, what it actually means for South Africa. And he says there is no way we're going to be abandoning patients in this country. We understand our history in how and where we come from with this HIV and AIDS pandemic, and we are absolutely committed. And he says, let's do some fact checking. Why are people not fact checking what we're doing? Some of the things that he addressed really, really thoroughly was the fact that he, as a department, they have a database of every single one of the patients that was supported by the program, and that they have then been moved to other clinical facilities so that their programs can continue. He speaks of the plans that they were working on alongside, in fact, he says, alongside Ambassador Brigitte, who was still here at the time, Bill and Melinda Ferguson Foundation, and many other stakeholders who came to the party in helping to transition from that shocking announcement by Trump that he's going to be, he will not no longer be supporting our program. So he was really, really scathing, saying, you know, the idea that South Africa does not have a plan to support patients who are living with HIV and AIDS is absolutely absurd. And yes, they were supported as a department, but we continue, we will carry on, and there is a budget to do that. So we'll have that conversation also a little bit later on, and I'll bring that clip to you as well. However, a very, very disturbing story came through much earlier on, and I'm not sure how many of you have been able to catch up on this one, but it's a retrenchment of about 200 mine workers in Barberton Mines. And the allegations coming through from the mine workers themselves saying, no, the mine is only retrenching South Africans and retaining foreign workers. On the line with us is mining expert David van Wyk. Thank you so much, David, for your time again. Good evening and welcome.
Thank you very much for having me. And well, it's a very disturbing story, but it's rather predictable.
And how so, David?
Well, it's predictable because those mines are 150 years old. They should not actually be mined. They should be shut down and they should be rehabilitated. The people there are pillar stripping. They are mining the pillars, the only places where there's gold left in those old mines. It's being remined by Pan-African Resources, which is a rather dubious company as well, alongside with companies like Central Rand Gold and so on. I predict that it will go belly up and bankrupt. They claim that they are retrenching workers because of the gold price falling, but the gold price is the highest it's ever been
right
in
now.
History.
Yeah. So if this is the story, I mean, What is your, you know, the history in your own understanding of why they're not doing this in a way that would be responsible? In other words, you know, get the workers understand what the prospectus is and how long they have to still get to mine and what's possible, and do it in such a way that it's responsible.
Well, I think that what is important is that they're probably retrenching South African workers because South African workers are more militant.
Yes.
And retaining the foreign workers because they can probably pay them less in future when, you know, the price is down and they want to cut costs to make it profitable to get those last crumbs of gold from those pillars. Which, like the Lily Mine, the central pillar collapsed and the whole business caved in. Mm-hmm. This can also happen in Barberton, which is not too far from where the Lily Mine is. Mm-hmm. And it is in an area of extensive fault lines and so on. So those are also pretty dangerous mines, apart from the fact that they are very old. But, you know, the other thing which is very worrying for me is that if they send these workers, the 900 workers they want to retrench, if they do retrench them, back to the Eastern Cape, the Eastern Cape will be flooded with retrenched workers, which happens every time mines retrench workers, and the health services and so on won't cope because many of these workers are actually on chronic medicine. You just spoke about HIV/AIDS a moment ago. You know, so people flood into the clinics which are not informed ahead of time that, you know, there's a flood of workers coming back home to the Eastern Cape. And then that really puts a lot of pressure on the Eastern Cape. And everybody says, well, the government is failing to deliver health services, when in actual fact, you know, the government is trying to cope with massive retrenchments on the mines. You know, as benchmarks we've been saying, large-scale industrial mining is no longer sustainable. It's not really sustainable because minerals are not renewable, and so the large-scale mines are leaving. They are selling these marginal mines like the Barberton mines to companies like Pan African Resources, who really can't cope with the costs required for continuing mining and also for rehabilitating and closing the mines properly.
David, how do we then get these mines to at least be accountable and responsible in such a way that there isn't hostility? Because, you know, you and I have spoken a lot about the fact that there are ways in which we can do this responsibly. So even as there is something left over there that we can do, we can collaborate better. How do we get that right?
Well, I think that what we need to get right is the government actually needs to apply the law. We've got very good mining laws, and one aspect of the law that is a bit weak is around mine closure. We should not allow large-scale companies to shut down or to sell mines that are close to closure. Mm. You know, you shouldn't sell redundant mines to smaller companies who you very well know will not be able to bear the costs of continued mining or even of closure and rehabilitation. You should force large-scale companies to stay with the mine until it closes. And they've got the resources, that because they're global corporations, they've got the resources and so on to close and rehabilitate properly. And then, of course, you know, you look at the infrastructure that is there and so on, and you repurpose the infrastructure. I've said this many, many times. To repurpose the infrastructure for alternative uses so that the retrenched workers can remain in jobs, but they can be remaining jobs for alternative activities. You know, so you use the mine wasteland for solar energy production that feeds energy back into the national grid. We've got an energy crisis as we speak. I'm sitting here in the dark because we're load shedding again, which I hope was a thing of the past. You know, so that's one of the things that you can do with that mine. You know, you can do agro mining. You know, you could take the mine dumps and you can plant plants that actually extract minerals from the waste, and you can give those kinds of projects to the community around the area and so on, so that the community is sustained and it doesn't become like Stilfontein, where the community becomes reliant on people who invade the mine because the mine is no longer coping.
So we have, as you said, we really do have great laws. And I've never really understood this. What's the reluctance about actually policing and actually doing what is right, because the laws are there?
Well, I think that I'm quite pleased to say that this week some of the directors of Optimum Mines have been taken hold before the courts for not closing and rehabilitating an operation. It was announced earlier this week. This is the first time probably in our history that something like this has happened. They all, of course, pleaded not guilty, but the fact is that the department and the government is acting now for the first time. But now we don't know if there's political influence there, because that mine was one of the mines that was involved with the conflict between Glencore and the Guptas, you know, so I don't know if this is political retribution that's taking place there or not, but one would want to see mine directors, company directors, being prosecuted for being irresponsible in terms of mine closure, and that is what should happen. Of course, the government will say that will discourage foreign investment, but, you know, we need to look at the Sahel and see that we don't have to rely on foreign investment to mine our minerals. Mm. We can mine our minerals ourselves, and we can use them for our own benefit as well.
So this, you know, I think there are two things for me. Yes, the prospects of mining further and all the things that you've discussed, but why then, for instance, things like the Department of Labor, why don't they then come in and enforce the right laws in terms of who gets employed?
I think that's a very good question that you are asking. And the reason, well, immediately after the Marikana massacre, I was in a conversation with the Director General for the Department of Labor in 2012. And I asked him, why didn't they intervene? And he said, no, because in terms of the mining law in South Africa, mine labor doesn't fall under the control of the Department of Labor. You know, they do their own, just like they do their own health and safety. They don't fall under the Department of the Environment and so on. So they do their own labor. And so consequently, mining companies are able to get away with murder, literally. You know, so we need to deconstruct the Department of Mineral Resources as a super department and make it subject to the same laws and regulations as all other businesses. Yeah. If other businesses have to comply with environmental legislation, health legislation, labor legislation, and so on, then mining companies will start behaving better.
I'm speechless. I'm really struck by what you've just said, that they do not have to comply. And as you've just said, I mean, it's a super department then. They can just do whatever they want to do.
Well, I think that as a department, very often I think that they think that they are above the constitution of the country as well. You know, when we look at the loss of land for people in rural areas and so on, two big mining corporations that run just roughshod over people without proper consultation and so on. And even in this case, you know, where the workers say that when they were hired, they were told first in will be last out. And what they are finding now, in fact, is that last in, you know, are the people, the last in people should be first out, and the first in people should be last out. And, you know, these people who have been working there for 10 years are finding that they are being dismissed as other people. And as you say, maybe foreign workers are being brought in and they are taking the jobs of people that that are there as South Africans.
So then what recourse would some of these workers have if the Department of Labor is not responsible for them? Then what do they do? I mean, I was hearing one saying that they are walking away with 21,400 after working there for 13 years and no discussion, no Section 198, nothing, just take a retrenchment letter and go.
They should pull their money and get labor lawyers. They're not too far from Richard Spoor, you know, they're in the same problems as him. They should actually hire a good labor lawyer who will take up their issue for them. You know, they really should think to take legal recourse, you know, because very often when departments fail in their regulatory duties and their oversight duties and so on, people resort to the courts and they do so successfully. You know, you don't often get the reports on the successes, but the successes are there. You know, the silica case, for example, the asbestos case, for example, the Bombella case. There are so many cases that I can mention where aggrieved people who were aggrieved by the inaction of the department and the bad behavior of the corporation has led to legal action where, you know, the corporation and the department have to cough up.
Yeah. I really appreciate you giving us your time. Thank you very much for your perspective. That's mining expert David van Wyk. And this is on the back of the 200 mines, well, sort of, plus minus 200 mine workers who've been retrenched at the Barberton mine. We obviously were not able to get the mine to respond to these allegations, but we have journalists who've covered the story on the ground, and obviously they've been able to speak to those who've been retrenched, and they've given evidence to the fact that, yes, they've been retrenched, and what they're walking away with. What is very alarming is the fact that we are told the mine itself has retained only foreign labor, and that obviously is something that concerns those who've just been retrenched.
Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.